Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining me tonight. Tonight I have a guest who has written many books, a lot of them kind of how-to books. For many years, he was an automobile salesman, and then he got involved with motorcycles, about motorcycles and selling motorcycles. He's raised a family, and he has written a lot of books, like I said, in the arena of teaching you how to, like, buy a car, things like that, so that you are an informed consumer. He has also written some children's books, which I thought was rather nice, that he went from how-to information to things for kids, which always is very close to my heart. He'll be calling in a few minutes, and we're going to enjoy a conversation with him. I would like to touch base, though, very quickly on sending some well wishes and some condolences out to poor Paris Jackson, something that I think occurred with this young woman because of everything that happened to her dad. And this for me is sad, very, very sad. And I think that something needs to be done about her being harassed or being picked on. It came to me today that she has actually been being bullied in her school. I didn't get the information on where she goes to school or anything like that. I did find out that she gets bullied, though. There's an organization that's very close to us here that is kind of following it. I'm going to ask everybody to hang on for a moment, please. Hello? Hi, everybody. I'm back. I apologize. There was a problem with the phones. I hope everybody is back with me. And I have Jeff with me. So hang on. I'm going to bring him in. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for calling tonight. I've kind of laid a little bit of groundwork. I've told everybody that for many years you worked in the automobile industry, and then you moved on to motorcycles, and that you've written some kind of how-to books, and that you've even written some children's books and raised a family. So I would like to open the conversation with you telling us a little bit about that journey.
Oh, the journey. Well, the journey was a long journey. And it was, I don't look back on life as a negative. I've had the opportunity to really live a lot of different things. And like you said, I was in the car business for a long time. And then I was worked for Harley Davidson for a long time. Mm. And then I started
every
writing
man's
books.
Dream.
Yeah, it was a great job, as a matter of fact. And then I started writing, and I've written quite a few how-to books for the automobile and motorcycle industry. And I wrote one called called The Informed Buyer, to show people how to buy a car without getting gypped. And then I wrote one, a children's book called Thoughts Journey, which is doing really well. It's an illustrated book that's longer than most children's books. It's meant to give the parents a 4 or 5 night stretch where they read parts of the book with their child together. And each night they can anticipate the excitement for the next day and think about what's going to happen next. So it's a little longer than most. And then most recently I released a Western called Marshall Gold, which is for people like us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love what you just said about the kids' book, though. That's really good, because if there's one thing I know about young people, they love anticipation. They love it. I mean, they'll drive us crazy with it, but they love it.
Absolutely. The whole idea was that, you know, there's so many things that take our kids' minds, even at 4 or 5 years old. You know, they're on the toys nowadays are much better than when I was young. And the television, and there's, you know, all these different things. There's video, there's iPads, all these things they could be using. This book was meant to try to give the parents a chance to get some of that time back. You know, when they read that book together, that bonding that goes on and anticipation for the next night, hopefully that draws them a little closer, or in some way just helps the relationship that is constantly being taken from parents. You know, as being a parent, I raised 3 kids of my own. Mm-hmm. You're constantly bartering to get some of their time, because they're
always
busy. That's
so true. That is so true, especially when they reach a certain age. I remember all my kids were 4 kids in 5 years, so I didn't have time to speculate what it was going to be like with the next one, because they were already there. But you're right. And, of course, now with teenagers, I even say that to them. Every now and then they'll be sitting beside me, and I'll say, God, I miss you. And they say, Graham, I'm right here. And I'm like, yeah, but you used to come in, and if I was sleeping, it would be nothing for one of them to lay down beside me on the bed at 11 o'clock at night and just talk to me. And, you know, that goes away. You know, that kind of disappears. So I love the idea of reading a book piece by piece like that and having something to look forward to the next night. I remember doing that with Little Women with my grandma. We would read a chapter at a time and get to know the characters in Little Women and everything. I'd forgotten it until you, not forgotten reading Little Women, but forgotten that I read it with my grandma, who I was very close to, and it was wonderful. That's a great idea, Jeff. I love that idea.
Well, you know, most of the children's books when I was growing up was the big popular ones, which are still popular, were Dr. Seuss. But those are really one-night books. You read
them. You're right.
In one night, and then it's over. And you can either keep buying books, or you can buy something that you can stretch out over a period of time and, you know, anticipate. And then you can even talk about before you start reading the next day, what do you think is going to happen? You know, it causes some interaction with a child and get some thinking going on. And I think it's a very positive, you know, hopefully it's selling. The book is selling. That's always a good sign.
And what's the name? What's the name of this book?
The name of the book is Fott, FOTTS, Fott's Journey. And you can buy it in paperback or electronic, Kindle, Barnes & Noble, you know. They even sell it in Moscow.
Really?
Oh, yes,
so where'd you get the name Fott's? What does Fott's mean?
Well, the name I originally got was his friend that he meets. Her name is Mott. And I got the name Mott because of a person that I knew that people used to call Mott. That I worked with a long,
I have an Uncle
Matt.
Matt. How funny is that?
And I know the kids like things that rhyme, and so I just got thinking about, well, we'll call him Fott or Matt, and that kind of separates, you know, in the book it talks about the sound versus the sound, and you know, it's a story of everyday life struggles that you and I have gone through, but from a caterpillar's point of view.
How do you deal with the fact that the caterpillar, I guess it's not the kind of caterpillar that turns into a butterfly, huh?
Well, he hasn't turned into one yet, and
okay. He's
kind of a caterpillar's caterpillar. You know what I mean? He's not. There's I'm sure will come up in one of the books. This is the number one of four.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll come up in one of the books that, you know, the butterfly caterpillar thing. But not all caterpillars turn into butterflies.
That's true. That was the first thing I thought of. Because that in itself is a beautiful thing to explain to a child.
Yes.
You know, the fact that a creepy crawler turns into a beautiful flying butterfly. I always thought was a wonderful thing to share with kids, and always did with my own, talked about, of course, they all grew up really young years in West Danby, so digging in the dirt and playing in the woods and things like that. Everybody was always told to never come home with anything without legs, and I have three boys and one daughter. The only one who brought home something without legs was my daughter, and it was a hand, a little tiny hand, she was like three, full of worms that she found and brought them home to me. And I was like, oh, my God. I thought I was going to boil her hands off to get them clean because I was so devastated that my only little girl picked up a handful of worms. So that's I like a story like that. I think that's a great idea. I have Shelley on the line. I know she's going to want to ask you some questions. I'm going to bring her in. She just joined us, so she didn't hear too much. Hi, Shell. I have Jeff on the other line. Jeffrey, this is Jeffrey Veit. Jeffrey, this is one of my very closest friends, Shelley Villareale. Shelley, Jeff Veit.
Hi, Jeff. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Sherry. Villareale, is that correct?
Yes.
Villareale.
I got it right, huh? Good.
Uh-huh.
Well, nice to meet you, too.
So he's telling me, well, we've talked a little bit, and I know you haven't probably heard anything because I haven't seen your number come up.
Right.
But he's written a lot of books and a lot of how-to books because he's been an automobile salesman, and then he moved to Harley-Davidson, and he's written some books about that, too, so that you don't get, you know, taken advantage of when you're purchasing any of those very expensive items. And then he wrote a kid's book. But what I love about, he's got a character that's a caterpillar. And and it's called FOTS, F-O-T-T-S, Journey. And but it's written so that you read a chapter every night so that the child has something to look forward to spend time with mom or dad the next night. Isn't that an awesome idea?
Oh, that is. Very ingenious. That is great.
That's what I said. I love that. I love that. And we were talking about how much young people love anticipation, you know. Of course, they drive you nuts with it, but they love it. You know, it's a favorite thing for a child to anticipate something that's coming. And I'm going to let Jeff finish telling us about some of these things. And he's raised three children, too, so we're going to ask him about his kids, too, and what his kids might have given to him so that he could write a book like that. I'm sure there's some stories there as well.
Sure, yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So you're on again, Jeffrey.
Okay. Well, the idea, of course, is that this book, not only being a little longer, there aren't chapters. You break off wherever you want. Each page, every time you turn a page, along with the wording, there's a full-page illustration of something that's happening with the caterpillars or at that part of the story. So there's a lot of color illustrations for the younger kids, you know, to this day, you know, that's something that's important to them too. And so you get both of those. But I don't use any baby talk in this book. I don't use some of the techniques that other children's book writers. This is kind of like for ages 4 to 9-ish, 4 to 8, 4 to 9. And I don't use baby talk. I use regular language. And I know, you know, kids nowadays, at 5 years old, they're smarter than they were when I was 5. I don't care what anybody says.
My 6-year-old is smarter than I am now. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, maybe even then. That's right. Are you smarter than a 5th grader or whatever? But I'm not sure.
We watch that every Sunday night. Every Sunday night we watch that. Yes, I love that show. I love those kids, too.
Well, it's true. And it makes you wonder. But they're a lot smarter. So the words are more everyday language. And so you can, in fact, one of the school systems that I bought the book from me here in the Orlando area, a couple of the teachers said to me that they're going to do a teacher study guide because they like the idea of the fact that it doesn't use children's wording, and they can use it for spelling. They could use the book for spelling, or they could use it for, you know, vocabulary at early ages. But not that it's hard to understand, but, you know, words come up on it that would be, you know, that might, you know, it gives them the opportunity. You don't have to explain the gibberish at the same time. So it's turned out pretty good, that approach, that more that longer, sort of more intelligent approach, I like to call it anyway, seems to have, you know, seems to be catching on with people. Most of the people have tried it and read it, like it for that reason.
Well, I think, I don't know any little person that wants to be treated like a baby.
No,
I mean, they like to be babied. You know, they like to be babied, but they don't like to be treated like a baby, and there's a big difference with them.
Right.
And so I would imagine that that works very nicely. My AJ, my six-year-old grandson that I talk quite a bit about on the show, he, the beginning of the school year, we went to finish up a shot or two, and the doctor gave him this book, and it was wonderful, and we still have it. I never paid any attention to who wrote it, but it's like the first day of school, and it's very simple, and there's only like 6 pages. By the time we got home from the doctor's office, he had, because they were like 3 to 5 word sentences on each page, he could read it because he memorized it all.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens to it? It gets thrown in the corner, and that's the end of it. And unfortunately, you don't get any interaction between the parent and the child in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that some of the things we talk a lot about schools and teachers on the show, and I've had another lady who's written some books about a whale named Whatley. And she teaches in schools and reads in some of our in Belgrade and places like that where the kids are struggling in homes and what have you. And she reads to them about Whatley and an octopus and a duck,
nice.
Things like that, that have all got something strange about them. Whatley, his water spout is under his chin instead of being on top of his head. So she teaches, it's cute. Yeah. So she teaches the kids that it's okay to be different. And I loved some of the things that she's told us. She's been on the show twice, and she just emailed me tonight to tell me that the most recent book about Whatley and his friends has been published and is available now. So I'm hoping to have her on the show again maybe next week so that she can tell us about it. But how do you think, tell us about your kids and tell us if there's something that happened with them that helped you to write a book like this.
Okay, I can tell you about something. My kids, I have three. I have a son who is a theoretical physicist. I have a daughter who's a registered nurse, and I have another daughter that managed a Walmart and just recently left that to go back to college. Mm-hmm. And so my kids have turned out, I have great kids. Don't ask me how. it seemed to work out pretty well. I've been very blessed there, but... Well, I'll tell you what got me to write a children's book is my kids reminded me after I'd written all these other books. I've written 4 books, 3 about the automobile business and then 1 about how to buy, you know, called The Informed Buyer, on how to buy a car without getting jipped. And my kids said, I told them I'm going to go to fiction because I don't enjoy this nonfiction stuff. It's like work. And so they said, well, Dad, you always promised us you were going to write a children's book. And the reason I had... is one time, during a period of time with my son, we were reading and spending time together and at night, and we had this book that he really liked. It was by Dr. Seuss, and it's one of his lesser-known ones. It's called Marvin K. Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin K. Mooney is one of his books. It's short. You can read it in 20 minutes. And it used to anger me that we had to keep reading that book over, and we had 2 or 3 others, Green Egg Ham and a couple others, of Dr. Seuss, so we would read them over and over and keep reading the same book because they would only last one night, you know? And so I always said that I was going to write something longer because these things ended too quickly. There was no fun to it. There was no anticipation. There was no excitement. You didn't look for it the next night. You didn't come and say, okay, let's read the book, finish the book, or let's go farther in the book. It wasn't like a it wasn't a trail. It was more of a one-night happening with those books. And that's kind of what got me. So when I started writing fiction, my kids insisted that the first thing that I had to write was a children's book, because I don't stick to one genre. I'm not one of those guys that just writes books about law, writes books about, you know, or crime or any of that stuff. I write whatever's in my head. Unfortunately, that's what I have to write. And so I had a children's book in there from way back, and it was just a question of getting it out. And that's how so it was really that they're the kind of the reason that I wrote it, you know, kind of where it all came from.
Wow, that's
well, that's
great.
Good. Yeah, that's good. Well, and that's that's quite a nice thing for them to know. You know, I think that sounds like you not only appreciate them, but you enjoyed your time with them. And I don't think even at our age, we wouldn't like to hear that from our own parents. You know, I had so much fun with you when you were a kid. I mean, what a nice thing to hear, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, Shelley, her parents are still alive, but you and I don't have any parents left. But it would be nice to hear that, and I think that it will be nice for them to hear that as well. So do they live close by, Jeff?
No, as a matter of fact, that's when your kids grow up with careers and are successful, it's kind of a blessing and a curse. Because it's great that they're independent and they're doing well. But on the other hand, my son is in San Francisco in the Silicon Valley. My middle daughter is a registered nurse in Cape Cod. And my oldest daughter, who went back to college, she is in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
So
that's really
spread
out.
They're all over. And I hear from them about once a week, all three of them. They call me. So it's not like they're ignoring me or anything, but I don't get the half two grandchildren I've never seen really, that I've never seen much. And without me going there, if I go there, then I see them, because they're just not next door. It's not that simple, you know?
Right.
And so, I hear from them every week, it'd be nice if they were around the corner. But it's, on the other hand, they don't, they're independent, they're on their own, they're handling their lives, they're going really well. I mean, now I have time to do the things like I said, I'm writing. I just finished a Western. I'm in the midst of writing a book about terrorism. And I've got the second part of Bot's Journey, which will be at the end, the beginning of 2014. So I've got things to do. And
And you work too, right?
I don't work like I used to. I work part time for a friend of mine now to get out of the house for Apple. And I do it as to help out, but only at a few hours a week. And then I do some consulting work in the automobile business, motorcycle industry when it comes up. Like, I've done some work in the Miami area where you are at Peterson's, and I've done some work at Treasure Coast Harley-Davidson, Peterson's Harley-Davidson. But, I'm kind of at the point now where I'm trying to stick to full-time writing.
Mm-hmm.
I do this thing with that, my friend at Apple, who runs one of the Apple stores, only because it kind of gets, it's fun, and it gets me out of the house. I live alone, I'm a single guy, and so living alone, I need to get out of the house and talk to people, and what better is there than the Apple store?
Well, in that way, you need communication, Jeffrey, especially
you sure
if you're going to write books. I think being able to write books is all about being able to communicate with other people, because that's where I'm sure a lot of your interactions and your books come from. Tell us about, what did you say the other one is called, Marshall Gold?
Marshall Gold, I just released. The electronic version is out, but the paperback is not actually on the street yet. It's just a couple of weeks ago. It's a book about a U.S. Marshal shortly after the Civil War, 1870. And he was a veteran of the Civil War, and he's a U.S. Marshal, and he struggles, capturing the bad guys in the West around Utah and the Wyoming Territory, and his reflections on the Civil War when he was a sharpshooter in the battlefields, and the times that he, saw hundreds of men killed, and then struggling to capture some guy that, that maybe has robbed a bank. And at the same time, he meets a girl, of course. That's part of it. It's Western romance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he meets a girl.
Well, you can't have a cowboy without a cowgirl, honey. Let's face it.
That's right. I have a cowboy. He meets a woman from a woman in a town in on the way, and there's a love story to it. And it's about him. He's just one of those guys. He's the kind of guy. This guy is the kind of guy that all men would like to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
like
I mean, that
just came out.
Like another, like that's John Wayne, right? I mean, you know, every guy
sort of
fancies
like
himself John
more
Wayne.
Down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you're right, but even more down to earth than John Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Even more kind of a little boy when it comes to women. He's been on the road in the Civil War and on the road as a sheriff so much. He's not a worldly with women like James Bond. He's just an
mm-hmm.
average guy. He's an average guy until he just, you know, gets in a gunfight. Then he's not.
Well, that sounds like a good book too. That sounds like a good book too. But
that's
I really am. I'm excited to find Fott's journey. Because I would have a great deal of fun reading that with AJ. And Shelley has, as a matter of fact, Shelley, I ran into your niece and all three of her children yesterday, and I cannot believe how grown everybody is. And
oh my God.
I got a big kick out of Cody.
Isn't
you know
he
what he said to me? Yes, he's adorable. You know what he said to me? He says, you know, some of my teeth grow down and some of my teeth grow up.
Yeah, he's always making observations like that. He just pops up and all of a sudden he'll just come up with something like that, and you're like, that's very good, very observant of you. You know?
When he said it to me, he was showing me, you know, some of my teeth grow down, and he touched his top teeth, and some of them grow up, and he touched his bottom teeth, and I said, you're absolutely right. And his Dawn, his mommy, says to me, you know, I said, Shelley has told me about him, what a corker he is and how he makes up stories and stuff. And she says, I know. She says, we have such a time with him. She says, but we have a new rule. And I said, really? And I was thinking to myself, oh, God, I hope she's not stopping him from telling these wonderful tales, you know. She says, no, we just tell him if it's not true, you're supposed to tell everybody before you tell it. You're supposed to say, this is a story.
Right.
And then he can
right.
say whatever he wants. Isn't
that's
that
right,
great?
Right. Yeah, because he'd be going around telling people these wild stories, and they're looking at Dawn and Michael like, this is what goes on in your house. And she's like, oh, my God, it's just a story. So they had to
yep.
start, you know, because people will, you know, like they're hearing a kid because he likes being told spooky stories. So sometimes
uh-huh.
Nina and I tell him stuff where he's being chased or this is happening, and then he repeats it to somebody. You know what happened today? And then they're looking at
him. Oh, Dawn. Funny. like it really happened. That's cute.
Right. So that's why Dawn came up with the, you must say it's a story rule before you tell a story, and it's,
mm-hmm.
He's pretty good about that. But I love the idea of Jeff's continuing storybook because this is something Cody loves. He loves being read to. You know, he has his whole book collection. We'll come over and he'll grab one of his books and he'll say, read this to me. And he sits next to you and he'll follow along in the pages and stuff, you know. But to have a book that would just continue going on and we'll say, okay, next time I come over, we'll read the next chapter. That's an like, incredible idea. Because
yeah,
it'd be ongoing,
love it too.
You know. Yeah, so I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm already planning on getting that book now, too, because of Cody. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, I think it is. I think it's a very good idea. Now, let me ask you something about your kind of like how-to books is what I called them when I opened the show tonight. Are you really able to help people from not being taken advantage of?
Well, I guess the way I would put it is this way. I spent 30 years in that business. Almost the whole time I was in the business, I was the manager of a dealership. Almost most of the time. And what I found is that the book, I go over a lot of ways, things to avoid in a car deal. So let's say you bought the book, and you might know three or four things not to do when you're buying a car. But in this book, you'll find two or three others that you don't know. So it's not going to be a book of information, and the entire book is something you don't know. But I'll give you an example, and this is a true story. This is an absolute true story. We applied the techniques in this book about 2 months ago with a friend of mine from my church.
Mm-hmm.
And she was buying a car, and she called me up. She said, well, would you help me with this? And I went with her to pick up. She was going to pick the car up. She'd already picked me up. And I said to her, I said, do you want to follow what it shows in my book, or do you want to go ahead with it? And she left it up to me. Well, we didn't buy the car. It took 2 weeks. And in a two-week period, I saved her $2,610.
Mm-hmm.
$2,610. Now, I'll admit, that's an extreme case, and that's why I brought it up. But all I'm saying is, if you buy this book on Amazon and Kindle for $3.99, and you only learn one or two new things from it, it's still worth $3.99, because no matter what you learn in a car deal, could save you hundreds. One thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's such a I just went through this with my grandson's fiance. Her grandma gave her a bond that she had been saving for her since she was a baby and let her cash it in so she could buy a car. And she was driving us all nuts, looking on the internet, looking here, looking there, driving my grandson nuts. And finally I said, you need to, my answer was to calm down and to not be in such a hurry, because every time you purchase something, a big purchase, it's my experience in 65 years that if you're in a hurry, you're going to make a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And always not being in a bind. You know, like if you have to have something right now, that's not a good time to buy it either, because you have a tendency to be taken advantage of, and you also have a tendency to make poor decisions. So I would imagine that's probably in your book, and you probably know that firsthand, because those were probably, when you were a salesman, your favorite kind of person.
Well, yeah, the impulse buyer, they call them. They call them impulse buyers. And
yeah.
You're
they
right.
Call what?
They're the ones that, they're called an impulse buyer. They buy on impulse.
Oh,
they just get
right,
the impulse
right.
to buy. And I need a car, and they go out and they buy one, and that's the one that would be the highest. Spends less time in discussion. But the book really says what you just said, due diligence. There's no substitute for due diligence.
That's right.
And a dealer has many tricks, car dealers do, over the years they've developed, to get you to make an offer. And pricing is such nowadays that no matter what you offer, it's an acceptable deal. You just don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that you shop and not make any offers till all of your shopping is done. That's really important, because they're, you know, it's like, have you seen the new ads about no-profit deals? Have you seen those ads where dealers are saying no-profit? Does anybody really believe that? It's not a no-profit deal. What they've done is the factory pays them later for the profit on the car. So they sell the car at what they pay, and then the dealer, when they determine how many that dealer sold, they earn a bonus level at a certain level, and they get the money. Well, that's not profit-free, because that vehicle contributed, and they'll get a per-unit bonus of $2,000, $1,500. So when people shop, you have to take what the dealers say in most cases. Not every case. There are some good, great, honest car dealers out there. I think there are more honest ones than there are dishonest ones, but you have to take what they say with a grain of salt and just do the due diligence. Write down what they told you. I give them a list of things to ask. Here's the things you need to know to make a good decision. You can't just ask the monthly payment. You have to know what the rate is, how many months it is, how much down payment you're figuring, all those things have to be part of the process. So I give them all these other things to find out. So when you're all done, well, you've got a clear picture of what your probably two or three best choices are.
And it
sounds simple, but people, you'd be surprised that most people don't do that. They don't shop. They shop until they get in a situation and the dealer talks to them into making an offer, and they pull this, if I could, would you? If I could get it for this, would you buy the car? And the guy says, well, if you get it for this, I'll buy the car, but not if anymore. And they sign the offer, and they don't realize that they just signed an acceptable deal. Now the dealer just, everything the dealer comes back and gets from them on top of that is just icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
Really, there's no way. Those people do that for a living. All of their, you know, for years, there's no way a consumer has a chance without some planning and preparation if they really want to save money.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right.
Well, you know, very sadly, that's true about almost everything we do. You know, I mean, the experience that you have, that you are explaining to everybody in a book, could probably could probably benefit you in every aspect of your life when you're making a decision. You're asking due diligence, which is imperative, which I'll bet you $50 if you ask a 15-year-old what due diligence is, they'll probably say, is that the interest rate or something? So they're not even going to know what that means. But
right.
We talk about on this show something that is very important to me, and it's just a different way of saying what you're saying. But when I talk about understanding what's going on between people, say you're a boss, you're a supervisor like you were for many years, and you have employees that are having problems because we talk about bullying in the workplace and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important things to do is to get the rest of the story. And anybody who bases an opinion on something that is about two or three people and they listen to one and make a call on the situation is a fool. So it's the same, it's what you're teaching them about cars pertains to life in general.
Right.
You know, before you make a decision, before you make something that's going to cost you money or cost you your time or cost you your job or cost you your relationship, you need to use due diligence and make sure that you have the whole story. So
right.
In essence, your books could say about, you know, how to buy a car and do the rest of the stuff you got to do.
Well, it does, and it gives them techniques on how to do it. In other words, if you're trading a car in and you want to know if you got a good trade-in, I give
mm-hmm.
you ways to find out before you trade
mm-hmm.
it in, whether that's a comparative price or not. Methods on how to shop price and how to talk to a giver and how to, you know, what answers to, you know, how much information to give out, how much not to. And so I give them some method on top of the advice as
mm-hmm.
best that I could. I mean, I'm sure there's people, you know, I'm sure there's guys out there that could write better ones than I do, but it just happens to be that I wrote the one that right now. So I think it's a valuable for $3.99. If you get one thing, it could save you $500. How can you lose on that deal?
Yeah. Well, and besides that, Jeff, I think it's very likely that 70% of us don't have a clue how to go buy a car.
Right.
And
exactly.
And do it like an advised consumer. I mean, we can all go into a dealership and and just buy a car. I don't mean to say that. I'm just saying to do it with some expertise and some information so that you are making a wise decision, I dare say 70% of us could not do that.
Right.
So
I would guess that's true.
Yeah, I would too. Unless you've been in the industry or unless somebody in your family's been in the industry and you have a little bit of an idea. Otherwise, it's all new to you. And I think that's a great thing that you did that as well. You know, I have a cute story to tell you about one of my grandchildren who fell in love with motorcycles at a very early age. He is almost 16 now, and I had a little red convertible, and we're sitting in that, and we pull up next to this guy on a great big Harley Davidson, all decked out. It was gorgeous. And he looks over. This is Austin Shelley. He looks over and he goes, "Hey, man, nice Harvey Davidson." We all started laughing, and the guy turned off the motorcycle so he could hear him say it again. He said, "What'd you say?" And Austin says, "Nice Harvey Davidson."
Isn't that cute?
We still kid him about it. Harvey Davidson. There, look, Austin, there's a Harvey Davidson.
Oh, poor Austin.
Yeah.
Kids say the darndest things.
Don't they?
Oh, I'm telling you.
Well, since I have you both on the phone, I love everything that we've talked about tonight, and I'd love you to keep us in touch with what you're putting out there for your books and everything, and you can send them to me, and I'll post them on my Facebook page and things like that so that people are aware of them. That would be a great idea. But I'd also like to ask the two of you, since we are talking a little bit about kids and we are talking about understanding people a little bit. Do both know what happened with Paris Jackson today, Michael Jackson's daughter?
No.
She tried to slit her wrists.
Oh, boy. Hmm.
And she was taken to the emergency room, and there's a lot of stories about it on the internet. Nothing with any factual information, obviously, but lots of speculation about why and how. And so earlier tonight, NAVI, which is an organization that is based out of Wilton Manors in Fort Lauderdale. It's a young black woman who runs an organization for gay and lesbian kids that get bullied. And she's done a lot of work for a lot of kids. She's been to Washington. She's met with Barack and Michelle, and she's done a lot, generated a lot of help for these kids. And we talk about the kids that get bullied because of their homosexuality, and the little girl that's up by you, Bailey, that tried to do something to start a gay straight alliance after school and they wouldn't let her do it and all this stuff. So I find out today through Jawara, that's the woman that runs this organization, that the scuttlebutt is that Paris gets bullied in school because of who she is.
Oh, boy.
And that's one of the reasons that she slit her wrists. And I don't know whether either of you have seen her on television, but she's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, she is a beautiful, beautiful child. And it kind of broke my heart. And, of course, all the other things that they're going through. And, of course, I feel as though we're the ones that hurt Michael Jackson, because everything he did was never quite enough. And even though I don't know if any of the other awful things that people say about him are true, and now that's another thing that she has to contend with, because apparently one of the choreographers that was questioned so many years ago, who said Michael never did anything to him, now has come out and said, yes, Michael molested him and everything. So now these three kids have got to deal with all that as well. Do either of you have any input about that?
Well, I guess it's easy to detest any part about that because, you know, it's obvious that everybody is a product of their environment. And as they're growing up, what they're subjected to, and she's subjected to paparazzi probably because of her family, and she's subjected to a lot of attention, and then she has all these different people that are scanning, and everybody's trying to come out with a story. Really, it's about money. Everybody is after his money.
Right. I agree with that.
This story or that story or this story, it's all about the money. And if the money went away, all of this would go away and she could live a natural life, but she can't. And unfortunately, kids do that. Kids, you know, my experience, I have a background about some of this. And kids, I think, try to do those sorts of things and not knowing that suicide means you're not going to be around for the rest of your life. I think sometimes they don't realize, they just don't have the connection that it means you're dead. I don't know why that is. They think it means something else, and they don't, doesn't really dawn on them that, well, wait a second, that will mean finally I can't come back and argue about it, or I can't come back and comment on it. And I don't think they really understand. I don't know how old she is, but,
I think she's 15.
I think kids at that age make a mistake and don't realize the finalization, how final it is when you, I mean, it sounds dumb, but it's true. They just don't understand how final it is when you commit suicide, and they just don't know where else to go because they can't trust anybody. Look at what they've been through in their whole life growing up. How can they trust anybody? Who are they going to trust? A psychologist? You can't trust a psychologist because they've been taught that everybody turns on you, no matter what it is. Look at Michael, all the people that turned on him, even his own doctor.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, think about that. Hey, so who does she go to? She has no, you know, it's kind of like, it kind of almost puts those kids in a situation where they have no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately,
well,
I think that's what happens to some of them.
Yeah, well, and I don't disagree with that. And we have talked about before the fact that young people don't recognize the fact that suicide is final. And my grandson, the one that got set on fire, he said that to me one night when we were talking, and he said, you know, Grandma, he says, a lot of kids don't understand that when you're dead, you don't come back. And I said, that's, you're right. And I said, do you understand that? And he goes, yeah, because I was almost dead, and I know you don't come back. So that was kind of hard for me to hear from him, but I realized that he was right. So are you saying then, Jeff, that you believe that somebody like Paris, who is in a position right now where she's hurting and everything, are you thinking she did it to get attention? If you don't think she thinks she's really going to be gone, are you thinking she did something like that because she's crying out for help?
All of the above. I think that she's looking for attention, help, friendship, trust. I think she's looking for so many things in the way that she's grown up and in her life. And there's been arguments over whether they're really the parents. I know in the past, forget what that whole story was about, who the real parents were and who her mother, you know, all these different, the only thing she's sure of is who her mother is, but, you know, all these things I think she's looking for anything. If you have eight areas, like, for instance, trust, and then there's, I want attention, trust, love, I want someone that I can go and talk with. If suicide would answer any one of those, that's why she did it. So I think it's unfortunate for her, like most kids. I think that when you're attached to a movie star or some really big figure, I think that the opportunity for pain is much greater than everyone else. And I think that her pains and troubles may be a little bit more than the average children's are. I mean, kids can have problems, don't get me wrong, but I think that hers have been so... You know, the news media just absolutely decimates a family. The news
media. When you're talking about famous people like that, basically they live in a fishbowl. There's nothing that's private. Any of their mistakes are blown so far out of proportion because if anybody else made some of the mistakes that celebrities go through, and then it's plastered on 12 different publications and you know, ran and reran on the TV news and stuff, that's like, oh, for God's sake. And then sometimes what they choose to put in the news and they sensationalize it, they sort of, you know, add a little bit to the story. And a lot of times when you find out the entire story, it kind of takes away from the sensationalism of it. But it's got to be very difficult. It's hard enough for the adults that are celebrities or sports figures, you know, to deal with this kind of constant scrutiny by the public. You know, now try to think of a young person, of a child, you know, that's being subjected to that same scrutiny and that same, you know, like all eyes upon her. It has to be exhausting at some point, and to the, you know, where you just like, you don't have a true sense of your own identity. And she has probably really struggled with that on many levels.
Mm-hmm. So both of you believe that in essence, though, it's more of a cry for help than it is understanding that she could have ended her life. I hope so.
I mean, there are some, unfortunately, there are some children that actually feel so hopeless and so lost and so disconnected that they don't feel they can survive one more day. And to them, it is a finality that they're achieving. But, and I hope I'm correct about this, I believe that's the exception to the rule, and I think more often kids are, they're at their wit's end about something, and they're just crying out for attention and help and like, look, I'm really, really, really in pain. Look what I just tried to do. But they don't want to follow through on it. They just want people to know that they're seriously in pain and somebody pay attention to me and help me fix this, you know. But I think most of them...
I think that's true.
I do too. And I, along with you, hope that... that's what happens from this, instead of more judgmentality and assumption and all the other things that go with our adult world. I would hope that there will be some empathy and compassion for this young child who doesn't deserve anything bad to happen to her, because she didn't ask for anything that she was dealt. And we've talked about that a lot before. As a matter of fact, one night when we first started the show, we talked about the fact that those kids will always be under the proverbial microscope because of who they were and who their father was. And like Jeff just said, the scrutiny over who actually parented who. I must tell you that they all resemble Michael enough for me to assume that he had something to do with their heritage. But even if they don't, it's just like an adopted child. Who cares?
Yep.
He raised them. He's their daddy. And that should be the end of it. But, you know, there's always people who want to be unkind. And that's, of course, one of the reasons that we do this show, in the hopes that if we talk about this, we'll get people to understand what it is they're putting out there for other people to see about them. That if it's always necessary to see the negative things or the flaws in someone else, then you're putting out some real toxic stuff, and you have to stop it. And it doesn't serve anyone. And really, at the end of the day, we've talked about this as well, other people are none of your business. And if you want to not have people judge you to that degree, then you have to stop judging others. And I think that that is one of the things that's gonna clean up the toxicity that we have going out there right now. And it has to be done on an individual basis. And we can only do it for ourselves. Otherwise, I would do it for everybody I know. And I can't, and neither can anyone else.
That's true.
Go ahead.
And you know, one other point, though, is that Michael, just because he had money doesn't mean he was a good father. Doesn't mean he learned how to be a good father. And when you think about it, most of the kids that have these, a lot of the kids, let's put it this way, that have these problems, come from broken families. And if your father's on the road all the time, isn't that the same as a broken family? That's the same thing. So this girl went through a life that we don't even know if he was a good parent. I mean, look at the way he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can you be, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree type thing? You know what I mean? So I think that that she may have not have had a great family life despite their money.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Unfortunately,
well, I don't think. I know lots of rich people. And they have the same kind of problems everybody else has. Their money doesn't keep them safe from these kind of problems ever.
Right.
But on the same token, it's about, if you talk to any adult that grew up with a very imperfect parent, which is most of us, because there are no perfect people. So it doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean that you don't regard them as your mom or your dad. Very rare occasions do you meet somebody that hasn't forgiven their parents for not being the perfect parents. And not that it doesn't exist, because I have talked to people and counseled people who have quit speaking to their mother or their father many, many years ago. So I do know it does exist. But the two quickest people in the world to be forgiven are the mom and the dad, almost always, because you need them when you're a child, and you want them when you are a child. So it sounds to me, every interview I've ever seen with this little girl, she gets teary-eyed and says, "He's my daddy. I love my daddy." And I believe that. So, but the point is that you're right. He could not have been a perfect parent, because he was a very confused young man in his own right. So to be a really good leader, we've talked about that before too, you have to be able to have your own head on straight. And obviously that wasn't always true of him. But it doesn't mean that he deserves to be raked over the coals now that he's gone and not let his daughter and his two sons appreciate his memory.
Right. That's right. You know,
and I anymore.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't want anybody bad-mouthing me to my kids when I'm gone. It's none of their business. I know that I'm imperfect. My kids know that I'm imperfect. But it hasn't stopped how much I love them and how much I would do for them at the drop of a hat. None of that changes. And I think for somebody who's dedicated his whole life in keeping them what he thinks safe because of his own scars, safe from the public, he must have really loved them a lot.
Yep, that's right.
So, well, you know, it's scary. There's no doubt about that. And our hearts go out to this young woman who didn't do anything to deserve any kind of bullying or any kind of mistreatment at the hands of anybody, like most of us. So I'm sorry that this happened to her, and I'm sorry that she had to resort to these kind of means to get herself maybe into a safe place, or maybe feel like the right people are watching or something, whatever the reason is.
But you take her seriously. That might be the other issue, too. She might just be needing somebody to take her seriously and listen to her. You know, that's another issue why young people go there sometimes, is that they're trying to get their voice heard, or they're trying to let somebody know that there's something going on with them. Then they're like, oh, well, you know, and the parents or the teachers or whoever they're trying to talk to is downplaying it, and it's, well, just do this or just do that. And it's like they don't even pay them any mind. And sometimes they do something like this just to prove to them, you know, this is, I want to be taken seriously. I want somebody to listen to me, you know. But it's, you know, and it's sad that a lot of this, you know, a lot of this media fervor is from what I consider irresponsible journalism. And unfortunately, I think there's more irresponsible journalism than not. I think too many people that are in the news media, whether it be newspapers or TV news or whatever, go for the sensationalism, and they don't pursue all the facts. And I've seen this happen myself, where I was involved in something that happened with my animal rescue, and they printed an article that was filled with so much incorrect information. And I couldn't get the person who wrote the story back on the phone to make any corrections. I sent 3 letters to the newspaper. I was so upset because they misquoted me 4 times, and the information they misquoted me saying would hurt ferrets. So if anybody took that advice, they would be hurting their ferrets. And I could not get the newspaper. So that always left a lasting impression on me, and I was very angry. So then it made me question everything else I read. It made me question all the things I had heard, and I had heard other people that had similar stories. And then you get the sensationalism when you're talking about people that are famous or in the news, and they put even less credibility on that because they just run with the story that's going to get them ratings. And I think that very talented man was just raked over the coals and sensational.
That's exactly the way I feel, too, and it breaks my heart. And, again, my heart goes out to her, and I hope that this brings the attention she needs so that she never gets hurt again. But I want to thank both of you. Jeffrey, you have to stay posted with us and keep us updated on what's going on with your book. And call anytime. You're welcome to call. If you're listening to the show and you hear a subject you want to enter into, I would really welcome hearing from you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate
it. Hey, it was fun. I enjoyed it. It was. No, you didn't talk gibberish. You're an excellent spokesperson. Excellent. Shelley, Jeff is related to me by marriage. He is Spike's cousin.
Oh, wow.
And we haven't seen each other in, I guess I did see you just before we left Ithaca. You were working at Zacacus, I think, then.
No.
It was David that was working at Zacacus. Was it David that was working at Zacacus?
No, it wasn't Zacacus. Nobody at Zacacus. I don't know where he left. I worked at Garage de France, maybe.
At Garage de France.
Yeah, Nissan, Mercedes.
Okay.
That's the dealership that I bought and then ended up not working out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well,
that's another story.
Yeah, well, you'll have to talk about that. There we go. There we go.
And we can talk about animal rescue some night, too. That would be good because I love dogs. I'm an animal freak. I love them.
So is Shelley. Well, we all are kind of, but not to the extreme that you two are. I've always been too busy rescuing kids. But animals have always had a place at my house as well. I have a very special little dog right now named Chewbacca, who I think is a pistol. So we will do that. We will talk about our pets, and that sounds like a fun show. But thanks, you guys, and I will talk to both of you soon, I hope. Well, Shelley, I'll talk to you next week when you come back. We were going to say goodbye to you on the air tonight, but we got too busy talking. So have fun in Chicago, Shelley.
Yeah.
It's on Monday through Friday, every night from 7 o'clock until 8 o'clock, and you call that number that I gave you, and you can listen or you can click on when it prompts you, and I'll get a little light on my dashboard that tells me you want to talk, and I'll click you in.
Okay.
All right?
That's been fun.
Well,
thank you for having me.
It was nice meeting you, Jeff.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too.
All right. Thanks, you guys. Good night.
Yeah.
All right.
Good night.
Good night, Vicky.